This is a Radio Charwell original podcast.
We love science!
So sport's quite important, isn't it? Yeah, that's very true.
Yeah, we're just sitting in front of the TV all day.
No, I'm so
And also, I've done a lot of things, so I'm kind of preparing patients before surgery and taking care of them after surgery.
Wow!
I'm doing observations.
Science
to
what are you
going to
be a miss for? What do you think?
Healthcare, mental health, vaccines, and
science and beyond.
We have a very special guest. We have a Manchester medical student called Rianshi.
Hi everyone, I'm a first year medical student at the University of Manchester and my name is Rianshi and I'm going to be talking about my life as a medical student today.
Well, first of all, how are you doing? What have you been up to?
I've been okay. I've just been preparing for exams lately because those are coming up and we're almost finished with our course. So it's just been sort of revising these days.
Yeah. Wow. Almost through first year already. How does that feel?
It goes really quick, to be honest. Like, I don't feel that I've finished first year, but I have.
Yeah.
And it was difficult, but now that I look at it, it went so quickly. But yeah, I'm just, it's like a surreal feeling. Like, I can't believe I'm going to be a second year. How are you feeling?
Good. I can't wait. It's just like a question mark of whether I do biomedical science or medicine. So I'm excited, but I don't know for what.
Yeah.
First of all, why don't you tell me what does your day-to-day life look like and what is uni life like?
So it depends on the day, but on a typical weekday, I wake up and then I get ready or whatever and you would have to make breakfast, which I found cooking to be quite a shock as a uni student because when you're at home, everything is like, you know, at least you get some help from your parents. But at home, you have to cook by yourself. So I cook some breakfast and then I typically cycle to uni. And then I would have either lectures or some other class. Like, we have consultation skills or physiology and pharmacology, which is practical things like taking blood pressure or blood handling, stuff like that.
Yeah.
Or we also have seminars for keeping healthy at medical school.
I feel like that is needed. I feel like a lot of medical students would forget. And I feel like I would forget myself.
I would say that yes, but at the same time, I'm not sure how people usually don't really retain a lot. And then I attend the classes and if I see my friends there, we might study together in the library. So in Manchester University, we usually study at Stopford. So Stopford is the medical school, where the medical school is based at. And then I would have lunch with some people maybe, and then go home, have dinner. Yeah, that's how I would do in a typical day.
That sounds really nice. So What kind of things have you been learning about in first year?
In first year, there's quite a lot of different topics. So first of all, there's anatomy. In Manchester, we have cases. So every week we have a new case. So we do it on a case-to-case basis. For example, if you have asthma 1 week, that week we will learn about the physiology of asthma. They'll also learn about the pharmacology, like what drugs are being used. So in asthma, it's going to be inhalers. And we learn about the different... We learn about everything surrounding asthma and how you actually treat it. And we go quite a bit of detail into the bioscience of asthma. And then we also have anatomy. So if we're learning about asthma, we might learn about the lungs, the anatomy of the lungs, the lung flora, and the different lobes or things like that. So the anatomy and physiology are connected. We would also have a pharmacology and physiology session where we would learn, in the asthma week, you could learn about like how do you instruct a patient to take an inhaler. We could have a spirometry practical, which is basically like you're assessing someone's lung function and how well they can actually breathe. We also have consultation skills where you talk to a patient, and in an asthma week, it could be like taking a respiratory history. So, or doing a respiratory examination. So that kind of thing we would learn in consultation skills. And then we also have dissection for anatomy. So quite a lot of our learning is so we learn the anatomy before dissection, and then we go and see the structures in person, which I find that quite useful. And it's quite unique to Manchester as well, because not a lot of medical schools have full body dissections currently.
I was just going to ask if it still does full body dissections or if it doesn't.
We still do full body dissections, even though we have prosections, but we do at least one dissection per session. And then we also have, at the end of the week, we kind of wrap all our learning up with a quiz.
That sounds fun.
It's fun if you get it right, because sometimes it can be quite difficult, but so the quiz is mostly for our own understanding though, and then we do some more quizzes and activities to make sure that we have consolidated our learning at the end of the week. So that's how the learning at Manchester Medical School works.
Sounds like it's all very packed, like your schedule. You have a lot to do.
Usually it's quite busy, and it can be difficult if you don't plan your day or plan your week accordingly, because it's quite independent. And we only have about 7 hours of lectures a week. And
that's too much.
It's really not. And we only have like 13 contact hours. So it's, we have a lot of free time, but it's not really free time.
So it's about 20 that is planned, and then the rest is just yours.
Yeah.
So 13 contact hours and about 7 lecture hours.
Well, 13 contact hours includes the lecture hours.
Oh, it does?
Yeah.
So that's even less.
Yeah, I know.
Oh, wow.
So it's only 13 contact hours, so we have the rest of the time to ourselves, technically. But really, it goes, a lot of time just goes in. First of all, at uni, you have to do everything for yourself, like the laundry or cooking. So it... and then you actually have to learn the content by yourself. So at our medical schools, I don't know about other medical schools, but it's so independent, so we basically have to learn everything ourselves, even though they do provide us with resources, certain resources, but it's up to you to make sure that you've learned everything for the week, so that you get a good score at the end of the week. Otherwise it can be quite concerning.
You know, I've heard that what they do in the Oxford colleges is they have like cleaners clean your room, so the students don't have to use up that time on cleaning, and they can focus on studying, which is, that's that would be so nice.
Actually, in my accommodation, which is called Oak House, it's actually getting torn down next year, but it's, we get cleaners every twice a week, and they clean the kitchen and the bathroom, which I think that's very helpful.
That is quite helpful. At least there's nobody in your room.
So that's quite helpful, but I know some accommodations don't have that.
I just wanted to add in that when I was doing my interview with Sheffield just beforehand, I talked to a medical student there, and I realized that Sheffield from this year on doesn't do full body dissections, they just do prosections.
Oh, really?
So that's a fun fact for you. Yeah, I won't have a chance if I do do medicine there, then I wouldn't do a full body dissection.
Unless you're becoming a surgeon.
True. No, and in Manchester I heard that annually I think they bring in about 20 to 30 cadavers. So quite a few.
Yeah, there's quite, you walk into the room and there's like a lot of bodies covered with blue drapes. So it's quite a lot of people. And we have a ceremony every year to have kind of it's called a service of thanksgiving for people that donated their bodies. Yeah. So it's quite nice because you can thank them.
Yeah.
And their families are there.
Yeah, that's so sweet.
Yeah.
Okay, now moving on. What kind of stands out about Manchester as a medical school or a school in general?
As for the medical school, like the full body dissection, like you already mentioned, not a lot of medical schools offer that anymore. Other than that, it's quite, I would say the consultation skills aspect is quite good as well. I'm not really sure if other medical schools do this as well, but consultation skills, you basically talk to simulated patients. So they are actors mostly that are paid to interact with you as if they're a patient, and you practice talking to them, which surprisingly I found that I was quite bad at that at the beginning. Like, I didn't know how to talk to a patient without, it's really hard to talk to someone and just listen to them without giving them advice.
Yeah.
So actually talking to a patient, learning how to talk to a patient is really helpful.
Yeah.
And you're talking to a simulated patient, so it's good to know that you can mess up and it's not going to cause, it's not going to damage the patient's trust in the healthcare system.
I mean, it's only your first year, so you can't be perfect already.
Yeah, exactly. So it's nice to be able to practice before we actually do.
Before the real thing.
Yeah, before the real thing, exactly.
Now, I have messed up quite a few times with patients myself, but obviously I'm not a doctor. I work in a kind of ward which has patients before surgery and after surgery, so it's a day ward. At first, I didn't really know what to talk to the patients about because my kind of duties involve putting stockings on them and socks, measuring their legs for that, or at least part of my duties. And I just found it very awkward. So I feel like you eventually learn what is like the right thing to say, or you have like a common kind of go-to conversation starters, like, oh, did you have to travel far, when did you wake up, hopefully not too early, you know, what operation are you having done, and just things like that. But I know, like, I have a really interesting example of this one woman that I did talk to that made me realize I should not do this anymore. I basically made her cry.
Oh no.
Yeah.
What happened?
I didn't mean to do it, first of all, but I think this is a very good kind of experience to share. So she was straight out of theatre. Well, first she went to recovery half an hour there, and then she went back to the ward. So she was still quite loopy, as most people are after surgery. And I just wanted to have a little conversation, like, oh, how are you feeling and everything. And I was asking her, is anyone going to like come and see soon, like any visitors? And she was like, no. And I was like, oh, maybe a husband or like a close family relative. And then she was like, I don't have a husband. And I was like, any family? She was like, I don't have family. Any children? I don't have children. And at that point, I was like, oh, I'm going to make her cry. Where am I going with this? So then I was like, oh, what do you do for work? And then we started kind of talking about that and like her interests more than kind of her personal situation. So I think that made me realize there are other things I can ask than those kind of questions.
And you picked up on the cue that she wasn't, it wasn't a good thing to talk about. So I think that's quite a skill to be able to pick, like, to be able to respond to a patient rather than just like, because one conversation, one set of conversation questions aren't going to accommodate all patients, so you have to change them based on how the patient's feeling and their situation.
Yeah, but I felt really bad about that, but I definitely learned a lesson.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. You live and you learn.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. Science and beyond! Radio Cherwell.
Okay, so let's get back into the medical course. So once you finish it, which is still a while ahead, what happens then?
At the end of your fifth year of medical school, you have to pass MLA, which is like a medical examination.
Mm-hmm.
And after that, basically you after medical school, you spend 2 years as a foundation doctor. And then after that, you can choose which specialty you want to go into. And depending on the specialty, it's going to be about 3 years or it can be 9 years.
Yeah.
So it really depends on the specialty.
Do you have a favorite topic?
A favorite topic I've learned so
far. You have learned. Yes.
That's quite difficult because I do enjoy every part of medical knowledge that I learn.
Mm-hmm.
I would say I found it quite interesting to learn about asthma because I do have asthma, and it was quite interesting to see like my disease, like learning about my disease, because I never really explored it like that, like how it works, the pathophysiology and also the pharmacology. Mm-hmm. I learned about like how inhalers actually work, which I thought it was pretty cool. I was like,
makes sense now.
And I could read my inhaler and I could identify the medications and what they did on my inhaler. So I thought, oh wow, this is like an actual application in real life. Like, of course, everything we do is an application.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's going to be useful. But that week, I thought that what I was learning was really useful, which made me more motivated to learn it. And also, when we were learning about hypertension, because hypertension runs in my family.
Mm.
So I thought it was quite a relevant thing to learn about.
Yeah.
So in that week as well, I found the pharmacology to be quite relevant and therefore interesting. So...
yeah,
that's why I would say those two topics have been my favorite.
So, what have you learned about like hypertension? If I were to test your knowledge a little bit, what would you say?
So I haven't revised hypertension principle.
That's okay. I caught you off guard.
Yeah. But I would say hypertension. It's mainly so there's different factors that influence your blood pressure, and different conditions. And there's endothelial factors that can affect. So what is blood pressure? Blood pressure is cardiac output and peripheral resistance.
Mm-hmm.
So to reduce your blood, so hypertension is going to be either because of reduced peripheral resistance, which is basically when your blood vessels constrict and you have more resistance from your actual blood vessels.
Mm-hmm.
And cardiac output is your heart rate times your stroke volume.
Mm-hmm, that's right.
Basically, blood pressure is going to be because of one of those factors being influenced.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to be because your cardiac output is raised for some reason, or your peripheral resistance is raised.
Mm-hmm.
And we can lower hypertension by lowering peripheral resistance,
mm-hmm.
or by lowering the cardiac output.
Yes. Yeah.
And a lot of drugs focus on cardiac output. A lot of first line drugs focus on cardiac output and lowering the heart rate, actually.
Mm-hmm.
For example, amlodipine focuses on lowering the...
I think my grandma takes that, actually.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, my dad takes it too, So it's a calcium ion channel blocker. So it basically makes the heart muscle less... contractile.
Mm-hmm.
So it lowers the stroke volume because if the heart muscle is able to contract less, it's less able to push blood out,
sense.
So lower blood volume is pushed out.
So
that lowers the cardiac output and therefore it lowers the blood pressure.
So that's
one of the first line treatments. Another treatment is Ramipril. as well.
She takes that as well.
Really? Yeah, my dad too. Oh my god. Yeah, so that's an ACE inhibitor.
ACE inhibitor. Angiotensin converting enzyme.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah. I remember this a bit.
That's really good knowledge actually.
Thanks. Yeah.
So it basically inhibits the action. It inhibits angiotensin 1 converting into angiotensin 2,
yeah,
which prevents aldosterone production and all mm-hmm. of that. So it promotes diuresis, so more mm-hmm. urine production.
Oh, yeah.
And therefore, you have less volume of blood.
Yeah, which.
So
yeah,
less cardiac output.
Mm-hmm.
But mm-hmm. cardiac output can only be reduced to a certain extent.
Yeah.
Because if you reduce it too much, then, you know, you don't want to reduce your cardiac output too much.
No, yeah.
Because you still need blood. So
you really need to regulate that, don't you?
Yeah. So you can lower peripheral resistance instead mm-hmm. of that. If it gets to a later stage, you might have to focus on peripheral resistance.
Mm.
So that's done by things like a non-selective beta blockers.
Mm-hmm.
So they can actually cause vasodilation, which helps in lowering the peripheral resistance.
Wasn't there one which also helps reduce how much, well, the heart rate, adrenaline, I think. I don't remember.
Beta blockers.
Beta blockers as well, yeah. I thought that was it.
Yes, beta blockers. So beta blockers can be... for the heart, it's going to be beta 1 blockers.
Okay, so there's different types.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, okay, that makes sense.
Yeah, beta blockers, it's very interesting because if you're on beta blockers and they're non-selective, mm-hmm. so there's beta 1 blockers and beta 2, and some beta blockers are non-selective, so they block both beta 1 and beta 2 receptors.
Okay.
And beta 1 receptors slow the heart rate. Mm-hmm. Beta 2 receptors are also in the lungs. And they can cause vasoconstriction.
Yeah.
So it can be quite bad if you're asthmatic.
Yeah, so I can imagine.
Yeah. So it's a contraindication for asthma.
Mm.
Beta, non-selective beta blockers.
That was so interesting. I feel like you really brushed up my knowledge again on all of that. It's been a while. I feel like I need to continue my cardiology course.
Yeah. Science and beyond.
What is Manchester famous for?
So Manchester has been known to be known to have a symbol of the bee, where the Industrial Revolution started, right?
So yeah.
People thought that all the people going into work in the factories
mm-hmm.
looked like worker bees. So bees consequently became like the symbol for Manchester
mm-hmm.
because it's like it's made by the people.
Mm-hmm.
So the workers all work together to make this city what it is.
Yeah.
The biggest Manchester was quite well known for its cotton production.
Mm-hmm.
So in Australia, the textile industry is still called the Manchester section, I think.
Oh yeah, the section, yeah.
Yeah, but it doesn't directly link to us there having been more bees in Manchester.
No, I didn't see a lot the last time I went. No,
I haven't seen a bee in Manchester yet, so...
But where have you seen, not actual bees, but just the symbols of bees, where have you seen them?
Well, the whole, the bus mm-hmm. network is called the Bee Network, so their symbol is a bee.
Mm.
There's also, like, posts with bees on them.
Mm-hmm.
I think there are some statues in Manchester.
Statues, I think a couple of mosaics as well.
Yeah.
I don't see them at all.
Yeah, it's quite hard to, find places.
Mm, yeah.
So I'm yet to see them do. And I've heard there's some graffiti with the bees.
So what else is Manchester famous for?
So Manchester actually has the third most... The University of Manchester has like the third most Nobel Prizes. I think the 25 Nobel Prizes after Cambridge and then Oxford.
Mm. So how many does Cambridge have?
I think Cambridge has 120... Like over 120.
Wow. And then Oxford?
32, I think.
That's such a difference.
I know.
Whoa.
It's quite, yeah. It's crazy.
Wow.
And of the famous Nobel Prize alumni, so the first time the atom was split, mm-hmm. that happened at Manchester University by Ernest Rutherford. And he actually taught in Manchester University too.
Okay, one last fact for us.
The suffragette movement actually started in Manchester by Emmeline Pankhurst, who founded the Women's Social and Political Union in 1903 in Manchester.
Wow.
Yeah.
And I've heard that up until 2019, there was only one statue of a woman in Manchester. It was actually Queen Victoria.
Yeah.
And then in 2019, because Pankhurst was such an influential woman, she also had a statue. I don't think you've seen the statue, have you?
I think I have seen it in the city centre, actually.
Where is it next to?
It's next to the Central Library, mm-hmm. which is quite a famous library in Manchester, along with John Ryland's. So they're both quite good study spaces. If someone is looking to go to Manchester, I think you should check out the Central Library and John Ryland's.
What are your plans for the next week or the end of this week as well?
My plans are mm-hmm. to study and cover as much content as possible for my exams. That would be my main plan. But yeah, and also have spent some time with my family because it's you don't see them as much at uni.
Exactly.
So
yeah.
If you're not at uni yet, you should cherish it.
Yeah, I am trying to.
Yeah. Yes.
Okay, well, good luck with your exams. I'm sure you'll ace them.
Thank you.
And thank you for being on the show.
Of course. And good luck with uni. I'm sure you'll love
thank
it.
Thank you. I'll let you know what happens.
Yeah, do tell.
Okay, thank you for listening, everyone. Bye.
Bye. Science and beyond.